I'm 12 years old, and I'm walking down the street of my town, a city called Middletown, New York, upstate New York. It's a lot like a smaller version of Bridgeport. I'm walking with my good friend Chris, and we're coming from altar boy practice. Now, we've got a little satchel that we keep our vestments in. You know what I'm talking about? We have a black cassock and we have a white surplice, and we're carrying that down the street. And before we know it, three Hispanic kids are up behind us. Two kids about the same size as me on either side of me, and a very tall kid up next to Chris. All before I know it, the one on my right has stuck something in my side, like a blade, like a silvery thing in my side. And he says, "Give me your money. Give me some money." I'm petrified. I weigh 90 pounds when I'm 12 years old. I look over at Chris, and the tall boy reaches out and slaps him across the face. We walk down a little bit farther. We don't know what to do. We're not fighters. I'm definitely not a fighter. And he sticks it kind of a little bit more in my side. The other guy's on my shoulder, and he says, "Give me some money." I look over. Chris gets slapped again. Before I know it, they jump on me. Both of them jump on me, and the boy on my right grabs my pocket and rips it open, trying to get money from me. Now, I'll come back to this story in a few minutes. Because what I first want to tell you about is being an altar boy in the 60s, and also a little bit about my family and a little bit about my father. Now, when I said altar boy, I know a few people, their heart flit because they think I'm going to tell them a really terrible story about some awful priests. That's not the case. I had a wonderful time as an altar boy. It was exciting and fun, and you got to wear those cool vestments, and you looked very holy. Didn't matter if you had rat's ass clothes on underneath. You looked good. I always wanted to serve 7 o'clock Mass in the morning because I'd get on my bike at 6:30. I'd ride down to the church. You know, the priests were kind of interesting guys. You had the cruets, you know, the little glass containers. You fill them with water, you fill them with wine. Father Forrester always wanted the wine all the way filled to the top. By 7:15, he had knocked that whole thing back in the middle of Mass. I was done with Mass at 7:20. There were only three people ever at Mass. It was the same three people, three really old ladies with black on, black shawls, black cloaks. I'd go across the street to this all 24-hour diner. I'm only 12 years old. It's awesome. I can have scrambled eggs, smothered in spaghetti, and a vanilla Coke. It's the greatest breakfast ever. At Easter time, from Good Friday up to Easter, the host had to be on the altar, and it was in this fabulous reliquary called a monstrance. And I'd always sign up for like 3 a.m., and my parents would say, "3 a.m., what are you talking about?" And they'd have to take me down, and you know, we'd be on the altar because someone had to be around the host. My friends who had just got off would be throwing jelly beans at us, and the three old ladies with the black on would be looking up at us because those are the only people in the church. But the best part about it was when I went to school, it was a Catholic, you know, Irish school, the priest would show up. Now, if Father Emmanuel O'Hurahan showed up, it was bad. He had this unibrow that was this big. He was the pastor, and he gave out report cards. It wasn't too bad because I always did good, except for one time when I got straight A's, and in courtesy and conduct, I got 2 C's. It was the end of my life. But occasionally a priest would show up. It was awesome because if it was midweek, you knew something fantastic had happened in town, and that was someone had died. And it was great because they needed altar boys for the funeral. And so you'd always sit up straight and hopefully you get called upon. It was great. You'd leave school for 2 hours, you go to the funeral, you go out to the cemetery, and as you're getting brought back to school, the priest would flip you a $5 bill. It was the best in the world. Now, this life that I grew up in, I had no idea that I lived in an Irish section of town. Everybody in my neighborhood, except for me, last name Bosch, had names like Hogan and Osborne and Kangley and O'Ryan. There were about 1,000 children on these streets. And it was a great place to be. At my school, we had 2 plays a year. We had the Christmas pageant and we had St. Patrick's Day pageant. Now, I don't think I'm much of a dancer. Ask my wife. I can count to 4, maybe. But it was an embarrassment because I always had to wear one of the girls' skirts, and I was doing jigs, you know, on every St. Patrick's Day. And then, of course, there's my family, because I am a mixed marriage, not unlike Maureen's. You know, I have a German father and grandparents who never went to church, and then I have the Irish Catholic on the other side. So if you went to my Irish grandmother's house, the main staple, the main food that we always ate there was tea. That was it. You'd come, you'd have tea. When we went to my grandfather on the other side, he was always eating some god-awful part of a pig. Pig's ears, pig's snouts, pig's knuckles. And they would say to me, both of the grandparents on either side would say, you weigh 90 pounds, you turn sideways, you can't see you. Eat. And I'm saying, eat? Over here it's tea, over here it's pig snouts. I'm not eating anything. Then there's my father. Now, my father, to this day, at 86, still has a temper. He's a lot like a German hand grenade. You know, you pull the pin, something's happened, you wait a little while, and dear God, you get out of the vicinity because it's a horror show, that's for sure. Now let's go back to that little street scuffle. So the two boys are on top of me. Everything's breaking loose, it's crazy, my pants are ripped, and in some like quick jerky motion, both Chris and I bolt away and we start running. We're holding on to our little satchel with our vestments though, we've got that, and we're running to his father's real estate agency. We get in there, Chris is crying, I'm in shock, I don't even know what to do. We call the police, they make a little report. My father shows up. My father says, get in the car. We get in the car and I can see what he's doing. He's stalking the streets, driving his car, looking for these kids. And what do you know? There's a place in the middle of my town. It's kind of like the nexus of this little city. And they called it Herald Square. It was all the streets came together. And there's a street light, lots of traffic, lots of people. There's a cop directing traffic too. And I say, there he is. And my father says, there. I said, there he is. There's the kid who had the knife and had to rip my pocket. My father throws the car in park, jumps out of the car, runs across the street. The cop's yelling at him. He knows the cop. He says, shut up. I'm getting this kid. He goes and he grabs the kid, but he doesn't grab the kid by the coat or anything. My father, who outweighs me 2.5 times, if I'm 90, he's 220. He's not tall, but he's wide and strong. And he picks this kid up by the neck and begins to kind of just shake him like a dog would shake a rabbit. He drags him back to the car. He opens up the door. He throws him in the back seat and he shuts the door. Now I'm paralyzed with fear doubly because I'm afraid of the kid in the back, although he doesn't look so tough anymore. But I'm deathly afraid of my father because he's going to kill this. He's going to kill this boy. There's no doubt. So the boy is crying, and if he had been smart, he could have just opened the door and run. I'm sure my father couldn't have caught him, but he doesn't because he's scared to death. And my father says to him, take us to your house. And so the boy just says, down here, down there, down here. And we make these turns and everything, and we drive to a section of our city that we never, ever, ever go to. There are boarded up buildings and buildings that have been burned. There are buildings, they're all three-story wood structures, block after block of really dilapidated, you know, down and out buildings. Where's your house, my father says. And the boy points to a house and we get out of the car, this little entourage of three people, and we go up, we walk in the back and we go up three flights of steps and my father like bursts into this room and there's a kitchen and the aromas are strong and there's a woman at the stove, but there's not much in this room. It's clean, but I don't see a toaster or a clock or anything. And the boy and the mom start going at it. They start yelling. He's crying. She's yelling, what's going on? My father is saying, who's paying for the pants, of all things? And two little girls come out around the corner, and they start crying, and it gets louder and louder, and I'm saying, Dad, let's get out of here. We got to get out of here. And they're yelling in Spanish, and she comes over, and she slaps the boy, and then we hear something down the aisle and down the hallway, and here comes another young boy, and he's in a wheelchair. And he's really, really sick. You can see that this boy is really sick. And I say, Dad, we've got to go. And he's saying, who's paying for the pants? And everybody's crying and yelling. And I give one last, you know, grasp my father. And I say, Dad, let's get out of here. And he turns and he looks at me. And he just knows that this is a total disaster. And he turns around. We walk out the door. We get back into the car. And he drives home in silence because I know the hand grenade, you know, never had a chance to go off. It didn't have any victim that it could find. And to this day, excuse me, but within a year, all the buildings in these streets, in these many blocks, are torn down in a giant urban renewal project, and it becomes nothing but rubble for block after block after block. And I think even to this day, 50 years later, I wonder about the boy in the wheelchair. And I wonder about those little girls. I wonder about the mom. And I wonder about the boy on the street who's sticking a little blade in my side. But even more than that, I wonder about my father.